Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Guy Schaefer. Today, WOOC's Mark Dunley will be discussing the state of environmental issues as they fare in the recently passed New York State budget.
And then, my special segment, in the Triple E segment, Education, Entrepreneurship, and Empowerment, we will be speaking with the incomparable Mahogany Akita, ballet dancer and actress.
Afterwards, WOOC youth interns Trayvon Votrin and Lauren Wilson report from the Women in Poverty, Women in Leadership Conference that was held in Troy as part of the Poor People's Campaign.
And later on, we'll have none other than Willie Terry is going to be talking to Tanya Grant of SEIU Local 1199.
Then we'll close out by speaking with Kevin Krolik, director of the RPI Chapel and Cultural Center, about the center's history and service as it prepares to celebrate its 50th anniversary. Let's start off the show with some rapid-fire local headlines. Internal company documents uncovered by a Dutch news organization show that the oil giant Shell understood the reality of climate change and burning fossil fuels from the 1980s. While Shell scientists urged the company to take action to reduce emissions, Shell executives instead launched a campaign to publicly promote scientific uncertainty about climate change.
In Brooklyn, New York, a Jamaican immigrant named Shahid Vassil was shot to death by police. He was holding an object that looked like a shower head. Four officers discharged a total of 10 rounds in the incident. For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC Hudson Mohawk Magazine 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
WOOC Mark Dunley talks with the Executive Director, Environmental Associate Advocates, about environmental issues fared in the recently passed state budget.
So we're talking with Peter Iwanowicz, who is Executive Director of Environmental Advocates of New York. We just recently completed the state budget. Peter, how did the environment fare in the recent budget?
Well, if you are a person that's really interested in keeping the status quo, which means an environmental protection fund that has been at $300 million for the last couple of years, or the deal they struck last year on water quality, if status quo is good for you and not seeing any rollbacks there, then I would say that the environment did well. But I hope most of your listeners aren't looking for status quo in this age of Trump. So I would grade this as a really poor budget and advancing the ball and making New York State the true global environmental leader that it needs to be. We saw no movement on the budget on a range of big issues that I know you're going to want to get into.
Well, what were some of your organizational priorities and how did they fare?
Well, first and foremost, we would like to see more resources into the environmental agency. The governor has capped spending on state agencies at a level of 2% growth that basically means that there are cuts to the agencies. And we don't have enough cops on the beat to ensure the polluters aren't taking advantage of our environmental standards. We don't have enough resources in our environmental agencies. But the governor's just not willing to put that money into his budget, and the legislature can't seem to find a pathway forward to match it. Other big issues include climate change. What we've seen in the last year of the cuts and rollbacks to climate change and the programs and everything we need to be doing to combat climate change that's not happening in Washington, D.C., we thought that 2018 would have been the year the governor really put forward an aggressive policy to get to 100% clean energy as fast as possible, and we didn't see that at all. In fact, the Assembly put that into their One House budget. The Senate Democratic Conference pled for that to be as part of the budget discussion, and the governor ignored those pleas and didn't negotiate at the table to try to bring the Senate Republicans around on that issue. So how you come out of a big budget fight that we had recently in Albany and not have strong policies going forward to combat climate change will be a mystery to me for a long time. And it really is one of those signs and symptoms of the fact that we didn't see the strong leadership that we expected the governor to demonstrate on environmental issues. We did not see the legislature really want to engage thoughtfully in a whole range of environmental issues. And so we ended up with the status quo with very little change. And that's a big unfortunate circumstance.
Now, one issue that's drawn controversy here in the Capital District is that last year the state budget appropriated, I believe, $88 million to fund some new frack gas turbines at Sheridan Avenue in order to power the Empire State Plaza. I understand that the Assembly did push some changes in that.
Yeah, it was modest but extremely significant change because, as you pointed out, there's money on the table to help change the system that powers the state capitol and the government complex here, which I've called the central nervous system of state government. They were going to power that with fossil fuels. So the Assembly advanced language and the governor and the Senate agreed to it in the budget to allow for some of those funds to be used for renewable energy. I think environmental advocates would like to see the whole project be renewable energy. There's no need to be investing in fossil fuels anymore. So it gives us at least a leg up to sort of argue that nobody's prohibited at the Office of General Services, the Power Authority, to now look at renewables. It's up to us to kick that door wide open and force them to make it all renewables. But it's important that at least there's no legal constraints on what they use that money for.
Now, there were a couple controversial things that the governor had done, including, I believe, trying to delay some of the tax credits for electric charging stations for electric vehicles. How did some of those smaller issues fare, and including the idea that was a little bit more positive that the New York Power Authority would be able to actually directly build renewable energy?
Yeah, so the legislature didn't want to give the Power Authority that authority on renewable energy to sort of build and own it. So that fell off the negotiating table. Thankfully, the governor's ill-timed decision about delaying tax credits for electric vehicle charging, green buildings, and brownfields, that was rejected by the legislature. So, you know, the governor proposed a lot of different things that fell off the table, some good, some bad. But really, you know, the bottom line with this budget is it kept the status quo, and that's not good enough in this era of what President Trump is doing and the leaders in Congress are doing to our environment.
Well, you mentioned earlier that, you know, groups had put forth a number of climate change proposals. I know one that groups have been working on is a form of a state carbon tax, you know, make corporate polluters pay for the damage they cause. That did not seem to get much traction at all within the state budget process.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of different assessments. Congestion pricing was another one. I want to talk about that in a minute. But you're right about the most economical way to sort of tackle climate change in a big level would be putting a price on the carbon pollution that polluters belch out and then using that for a range of different clean energy projects. That typically gets polls well, and a lot of New Yorkers would encourage that policy. That was sort of put on the table early for the governor in the fall. He rejected it then, and there was no interest in either house of the legislature in moving down that pathway. The one area where we thought we'd like to see some movement on that is to actually put a fee on driving in lower Manhattan to charge people from driving below 60th Street, what a lot of people call congestion pricing. The governor said this summer it's a time that has come for congestion pricing, but when he introduced his budget and his subsequent amendments, there was no political oomph behind what he proposed. In fact, he didn't really propose a true congestion pricing policy. So while they tiptoed their way towards eventually having a discussion about congestion pricing in this budget, they weren't willing to put a price on traffic in Manhattan to help fund and fix the subways and to reduce the amount of cars that are on the streets.
Well, obviously that raises a number of related issues. The governor focuses a lot on electricity in terms of its carbon footprint, but both heating and cooling buildings, particularly transportation, are actually much bigger. A lot of concerns about the status of the New York City and statewide transit system, and also the whole issue of what are we doing in terms of trying to reduce, you know, car emissions, which a carbon tax might play into. How would mass transit, how would some type of fee on, you know, what's come out of the tailpipe, you know, continue post-budget?
Well, part of it is just sort of having the right laws in place. Our goals for a state are for climate and clean energy purposes, is to move us entirely off of fossil fuels. How you do that without having a game plan in the transportation sector is a huge mystery. And this administration has no game plan overall of how to deal with the carbon pollution coming out of the transportation sector. You mentioned that they have a very heavy focus on the electricity side. But the transportation sector is our biggest source. It's more than a third. And we don't have the policies and programs in place. Some of that is because it's not mandated by law. Some of that is because it just seems to be an area where the governor is lacking political will to take on individual car ownership in the state. But the only way we're going to get to dealing with our climate change, the crisis of climate change and the impact of our pollution, is to reduce the amount of vehicles that are on our roads, massively build up public transit options for people to be moving between point A and point B better in mass transit, and to really have an honest discussion with people about the fact that of the 11.2 million vehicles that are registered in New York's roads, in less than 30 years' time, they all have to be electric. So we're going to need fewer of them. We're going to need a lot more mass transit built up, because in the future, we're going to need people moving between point A and point B, less so in individual cars and more so in more public transit options.
You only have about 90 seconds left. On April 23rd, hopefully thousands of New York residents will be coming to the Capitol to demand action, particularly from the governor, on climate change. What are some of the goals for that day?
Well, we want to see thousands of people coming to Albany for that day to really press the governor and the legislative leaders to get serious on climate, to really move the state aggressively off of fossil fuels. That's our goal as a state, and that's what's in our state energy plan, is an aggressive moving off of these fuels. But we have not seen the policy response to that long-term goal and that vision that the leaders have expressed. So this is a great opportunity for people to come to Albany to press leaders, to demonstrate the breadth of public support for a 100% clean, renewable energy economy of the future. So I really encourage people to do all they can to take the time to come to Albany on April 23rd. It's an important moment in our time, an important year to get it done.
So we've been talking with Peter Iwanowicz, Executive Director of the Environmental Advocates in New York. If people want to find out more information, keep on top of what Environmental Advocates is doing, how best do they do that?
Well, they can hit our website, which is eany.org.
Thank you, and this has been Mark Dunley for WOOC.
That was WOOC correspondent Mark Dunley with part of our ongoing coverage of the recent state budget, this time focusing on environmental issues.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM.
Today's guest on the Triple E segment is Mahogany Akita. She's a ballet dancer, model, and actress. Welcome to the show, Mahogany.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by. So as I always say before my Triple E segment, let's dig right in and make it do what it do. Okay? I'll start by saying this. You're a really good dancer. Who influenced you?
I would have to say my mom is my biggest influence. She pushes me to do everything that I do, especially with dance. It's kind of weird how I fell into dance. I started out with gymnastics, and then my pediatrician was like, "You have a dancer on your hands." And then I started dance, and then it stuck.
Wow. All I can say is my mom's pediatrician probably said when I was born, "You have an eater on your hands." But anyway, I digress. Let's move along. What was your first major performance?
When I was around 10 or 11, I auditioned for New York City Ballet, and they had little dancers, like from maybe 5 to 12, dance on stage with the professionals, and that was probably the biggest stage at SPAC that I've ever danced on, first major performance, and it was Midsummer Night's Dream, and I'll never forget it.
Wow, that's impressive. So, where have you performed since then?
My biggest after that was probably the Boston Contemporary Dance Festival, where at Urbanity Dance, they allowed us to perform some of the pieces that we had learned at the summer intensive. So that was probably my next biggest. I've done like a lot of open mic nights. I danced at Proctor's, which was really cool.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Now, you said you danced at Proctor's. Was it with an organization, a group?
So I did Poetry in Motion, which was...
Ooh, tell us a little bit about that.
So originally I was supposed to dance to this poem that someone wrote, and it was going to be the music, but then the music stopped at the last second. And so they were kind of just like, hey, you want to go out there and want to do a little dance? So mm-hmm. I did a dance and it was really cool. And they had like a bunch of... different performances there. There was spoken word, there were like singers, and I was the only dancer, which was pretty cool. So.
Oh, wow. So I hear you're in the movies. I mean, the big, big screen. You mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so actually at Poetry in Motion, there was this man named Prince Sprav who ran after me after I performed. And
after he ran after you, I'm sure your mom pulled out the gun. But anyway, go ahead.
And he approached me with this idea that he had. He has this company called TBU Productions, and basically with that, he allows the youth to have their own voice through film and the arts and such. So he told me that he was doing this thing, and then I was like, okay, I guess I'll do that. Wasn't really sure what was going on, but I was just going to do the music video for the soundtrack of the movie, and then he had said that there was an acting portion, went out for the audition, and I ended up getting the part.
So what is the movie again, and is it local?
It's called Cradle. Yeah, it's based in Schenectady, based off of true stories.
And what is it about?
It's about teen pregnancy, which Ooh. Is a very wow. interesting topic.
Yes.
And I think we're going to have a very big impact on the community once it comes out.
And when is that due to be out? Tell your listeners. I'm sure they're dying to hear.
We're thinking it will either premiere in the summer or in the fall of 2018.
Okay. And most of it was filmed right here in the Capital District.
Yes.
Schenectady. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, your goals in the future.
Ultimate goal, I want to be a dance teacher. I want to have my own studio. I love teaching little kids. I actually teach right now at my studio. But my goal is to have my own, for sure.
So tell me this. You seem like such a well-rounded young lady. I mean, you're extremely articulate, drop-dead looks. And I know we get that from Mom, Miss Kim, because she was quite a fashion model back in her day. Okay, but so like I said, you're so well-rounded.
Thank you so much.
How old are you? What grade are you in? And where do you plan on going to school? Higher education.
I'm 17 years old. I turned 18 in a week.
Bless your heart twice.
Okay. And I plan on taking a gap year because I want to audition for a dance company.
Okay.
So
now, what is a gap year for those who may not know what that means?
So basically, I take a year off of school to travel, think about whatever I want to be so I don't have to rush right into college. And,
okay.
Maybe go
okay.
into debt or whatever. Okay. So I think for me, it's a better plan to just take a second, take a year, figure out what I want to do, then plan after that what I want.
Okay. So I'll go back to gap year.
Mm-hmm.
I think I tried to do something like that with my mom. I tried to take a gap year. Mm-hmm. My gap year turned into a slap year, and she told me to go stay in school. But anyway, appearance means a lot. You know, and I know when you're young, especially with young ladies, there's so much pressure on to look good, be small, and, you know, do all of those things in this culture that surrounds us and just demands so much from us. What would you tell a young lady today who looks at you and says, wow, Mahogany, I want to be like you. Where do I start?
I'd say, first of all, you have to create your own path.
Okay.
You can't compare yourself to anybody else. You have to make sure that any sort of adversity that you might face, you have to take that with a grain of salt and say, listen, I'm just going to do whatever I feel like I can do, and you can do anything. You're in charge of your own destiny, your own journey. I think for me, I was lucky enough to have a support system, but if you don't, I think it's up to you within yourself, and if you want it, you can have it, no matter what sort of things you're going through, what sort of environment you're in, no matter what. And I think, honestly, it makes for a better story when
right.
you have something that's different about you.
Okay, so I want to take a little pause and just say again, this is H. Bosch Jr., WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York. Today's guest is Mahogany Akita, and we're talking to her about her fashion modeling career, She's an actress as well as a terrific ballet dancer. Okay, so we're going to move on to this. Tell me mom's influence on you.
She's always had
that
sort
of... And you can cry if you want. Go ahead.
My mom, I don't know. There's no mom like her, I don't think. She's a superwoman. She's mom and dad. She's whatever you want her to be. And she's
Amen
there.
To that.
She's there when I need her. She's there when I don't want her. Every time, you know, she supports me in everything that I do. When I tell you she'll give an arm and a leg for me to dance, she'll give an arm and a leg for me to dance no matter what. She gets me every sort of opportunity I've had. She's always there in the crowd, whether she's late, whether she's early. She's always there for me, always supports me. Mm-hmm. She's had the biggest impact in my life.
Well, along with giving an arm and a leg to support you, I'm sure if some young man knocks on the door, she's going to put an arm and a leg someplace else, you know, mom. All right? Because she's no joke. All right. So tell me this. Do you see yourself moving out of this area?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Right. The area that I live in is not very inspiring. I mm-hmm. think it's really hard to sort of create your way when you're around people who might not be on the same level/path as you, people who aren't as passionate. I think New York City is hustle and bustle, so I think I'd fit right in, just people pushing me. And then I can push myself in that way, too. So New York City is definitely where I'm aiming.
Okay, now where's home for you again? You were born and raised?
I was born in Albany, and I was raised in Saratoga Springs.
Oh, okay. I thought you were originally from L.A., because I'm originally from L.A. Lower Albany. Dude, I'll be in the area all week, folks. Tip your waiter. Tip your waiter. Anyway, moving right along. So how did you wind up in Saratoga?
I'm honestly, I ask my mom all the time. She doesn't really know either. We kind of just wound up in Saratoga. It was a nice area. My grandmother lives there too.
So tell us about your family. Big family, small family?
I have a small family. It's my mom, my stepdad, my brother, Cicero, who is my best friend.
Okay.
And our two dogs and our cat.
Oh, okay. Good. Because I know, as far as extended family, you guys have a really, really big family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, tell us about the performances you have coming up. Let's go back a little bit. The performance, what was it? You performed at an event where you danced. I think it was the coming out of that artist. Last
year. Lee Ray.
Yes, yes. Tell us about that. You were phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
And how did you get connected to that?
I honestly do not remember how I got that opportunity. I'm sure it had something to do with my mother because she gets everything for me.
Uh-huh.
I remember just looking at the stage and saying, that's not really a stage, but I think I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very small area. And as a dancer, I really like to challenge myself with things like that, and performing at a release party, I was like, okay, let's see what sort of difference I could bring.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I did Say Yes by Flowetry.
Okay.
And
yes,
I didn't dance in regular dance clothes.
Uh-huh.
I danced in like a romper, like a normal outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that kind of added something different.
It definitely did. You had the crowd in awe. I mean, it was a phenomenal performance.
Thank you so much.
And I got pictures with you and your mom that mm-hmm. I got to dig up,
mm-hmm.
you know. So tell me, what does Mahogany do for fun? Because you seem so disciplined and so structured. What does Mahogany like doing on a Saturday, just kicking back and having fun?
I love music.
Okay.
So listen to music.
Give me some of your top three artists. What do you like?
Kendrick Lamar. He's my favorite. I like Chance the Rapper.
Okay.
And there's a few underground artists that I like. Like, I like Saba, who sings, like, a lot of different songs. I don't know. He's not so mainstream. I don't really like extremely mainstream music. Like, I don't really like trap music.
Okay.
So I listen to music a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I draw.
Okay.
Right. I sing. Probably not very well, but I sing.
Well, look. No one can't tell me I can't sing good. In the shower, I've made several hits. You know?
I like hanging out with my friends, mm-hmm. Just like a normal person, but they definitely don't come before dance or anything like that. So
give me some of your inspiring dancers. Who inspired you?
Okay.
Now, there's so many.
Michaela DePrince, I actually met her, which was a crazy experience.
Really?
Yeah, I When I was, I don't really remember exactly how old I was, but I had an opportunity to take a class with the dancers at Dance Theater of Harlem. And Michaela DePrince was there, and she, I remember her whispering, "Who is that girl?" And I was like, "Oh my goodness, like it's Michaela DePrince." Basically, she got adopted, and she wanted to be a ballerina from the beginning, and she is. So oh, wow. She's amazing. Misty Copeland, obviously, she's like the first African-American dancer to be in a company, which was cool. I'd say those are like my top two inspirational dancers that I look up to.
So let's go back to the school piece. You said your school. Is it your school of dance, or, you know, when you talked about your dancing school? Let's talk about that.
Saratoga City Ballet, I would say, was where I got my start with dance. I call it a dance school because I was there every day for hours at a time. And I think it helped me with discipline. So Saratoga City Ballet is definitely where I started everything.
Okay. Now let's go back to some of the people who inspired you. Musically, what's your influences? What's your inspirations? Because you're so well-versed. You dance, you act, you know, I mean, mod.
I like Kendrick Lamar's music because I think he tells a story. He's not just screaming in my ears. He's telling
that's
me.
That's musically, not rappers, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's telling a story, and with my dancing, that's what I want to do. Okay. Whenever I think about a dance I'm going to create, I think about what story I could tell.
Great. Now, how about this? Actresses, who inspires you?
Actresses.
Yes. Or actors, you know, like the one you're sitting across from.
My favorite actress would probably be, I'm not really sure. I would say, I'm not sure if Kiki Palmer's technically an actress, but
oh,
she's
yes,
been
she
in,
is. Very, very good.
She's been, she was in this movie, or not this movie, this TV show that I used to watch when I was little. I don't remember what it's called, but I used to know every single word to it. I knew every episode. A lot of people say I look like her.
You know what? Mahogany, I can see the features. And let me just interrupt you for a second. She's in an episode on Netflix. She has a phenomenal role. It's called Berlin Station. It's about the CIA spies. She is so good. I really like her. Yeah.
She's,
and 23 years old. I can see you in her.
And she's smart and she's talented, and I really appreciate
it. Yep. And originally from Chicago. Yeah. Oh, wow. That is really great. So then once you take a break off, because I'm nudging you to say, where do you think you want to go to school at, college?
Okay. So Fordham University. This is my top college. I made it onto the wait list there. They had a lot of enrollments this year. That doesn't mean I'm not accepted. Doesn't mean I'm fully accepted. But Fordham University was my top because they're affiliated with Alvin Ailey, which is my top company where I want to go. Definitely where I want to dance.
Oh, wow.
But that's why I wanted to go to Fordham. University of the Arts is also one of my options.
Now, where's that at? The University of Philly. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to stay close. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I know East Coast dance schools, that's where all the competition is. You know, I mean, you really, really, really have to be on your A game each and every day when you go there.
Mm-hmm.
So then tell me this then. What can we expect from you in the future?
Definitely going to be a teacher. So I will have students training underneath me, as well as dancing in a company. I want people to see me on stage. I want to make my name. Want to create. They want to know who Mahogany Akita is. I have to tell them.
I love
have
that
to
name.
Show
what does Akita mean?
Akita? I'm not sure. I know it's Japanese though.
Okay. I love that name.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I think those are the things that are my top priority: company and studio.
So, before I close out, I want to say, how can people reach you if they want to reach out to Mahogany Akita?
So,
and take your time, knock it out of the park. This is on you.
Facebook is Mahogany Akita /dancer. And my Instagram is at Mahogany, MAHOGANY dot Akita, AKITA.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, listen, Miss Mahogany, you are a special, special talent.
Thank you so much.
Along with being stunningly beautiful. You are articulate, you're bright, and you are a true testament when the old saying is, apples don't fall far from the tree. I see so much of your mom in you. And you are an extension of her. What's really, really impressive about you is with all your accomplishments, you are a really successful human being.
Thank you so much.
And remember, as long as you continue to be a successful human being, doors will always open for you. So God bless you. Thank you so much for gracing us today with the interview. We look forward to hearing big, big things from you in the near future. Okay?
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. All right. Well, that was, if you're listening today's, all right, if you were listening, that was Mahogany Akita on the Triple E segment.
For those just tuning in, I'm Guy Schaefer.
And I'm H. Bosch Jr. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org.
On March 15th, a conference entitled Women in Poverty, Women in Leadership was held at the First Presbyterian Church in Troy. This conference was led by the Poor People's Campaign, a national movement focused on a confrontation with poverty, systematic racism, militarism, and ecological destruction. WOOC youth interns Trayvon Voltron and Lauren Wilson attended the conference and captured interviews with people in attendance. Trayvon and Lauren spoke with Nina Nichols, her daughter Talanda, and Brittany Vogel. They also captured segments of the panel discussion with women activists with a focus on Michelle O'Leary.
Why did you come to the Poor People's Campaign?
I'm very interested in knowing more about the historical Poor People's Campaign and about how we can be part of the one that's starting up here. And because my daughter's in town and thought this could be something that we could do together. And for justice, yeah.
Originally, I came here because my mom asked me to, but part of why I'm here is because I do a lot of social and racial activism at school. So last year and this year, I was a big part of like organizing the Women's March in Greenfield, Massachusetts, and also like organizing racial justice vigils on Saturdays for my school and like the mass slavery apology in Greenfield and Amherst, Massachusetts. So that's been a really big part of what I've done.
I remember you. She would stay school with me in Troy Prep. We're basically just like recording because like I'm into a lot of activist stuff. And I'm actually do the BLM thing, Black Lives Matter, and hang out and we talk about like what we can do. And then our school did this walk, a national walkout.
Yeah.
So when she told us about this, I was just like, I'm on board to come. So yeah.
Well, I went to Troy High. My grades usually are like up there. And then my mom thought, okay, Troy Prep's adding a high school, but I'm supposed to be leaving.
And where do you want to go to college?
I don't know yet, Pennsylvania. That's what I wanted to go for. It's biomedical engineering. You design prosthetics and stuff, so I think that's cool. If not that, I might fall back on civil though, because I like to draw.
Okay, so my mom calls me Micah, but I go by Talanda now, and I'm a postgraduate. I go to a prep school in Massachusetts. I went to Troy Prep for 7th and 8th grade, and then I went to Troy High School for 9th through 11th, and then I did my 12th and postgraduate year in Massachusetts. And I'm committed to Georgian Court University in Lakewood, New Jersey. So that's where I'm gonna go for special education. That's what I'm doing.
What's your name?
My name is Brittany Vogel.
So why did you come to the Poor People's Campaign?
Well, I got an email today, this morning, when I was at work from Citizens Action, and I decided, you know, I had the time, so I wanted to really come out here and do my part.
So when you say do your part, what do you mean by that?
Get involved, try to make a difference. I see all the craziness happening in the world, and I think it needs to change, and we have to stand up for what we believe in. So we can't let all the people that, you know, are in the office right now doing things that are destroying this country. We can't let that happen. So we have to make changes.
So these changes that you're talking about, do you have any ideas for the changes?
Yeah, of course. I mean, just restructuring the way we think about our country. I think our economy doesn't work for everybody. I think the climate change is a huge issue. I think the prison issue is really big and keeps people in poverty. I think we really just need to think about how we treat each other as a community.
All right. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I hope more things like this happen throughout the year and we can do more. And, you know, I'm ready to help. So that's it.
All right. Thanks for doing this interview.
Of course. Thank you.
So I think that the amazing thing is that you cannot talk about militarism and the fact that half of our discretionary dollars go to the Department of Defense and to war. The fact that we, this September, will have been at war for 17 years and we will have youth enlisting in the military who were not born when the Iraq War was authorized for the first time. So those things impact funding for social programs, for education, for all of these things, right? They impact the very fabric of our culture and the context with which our youth are growing up. You can't talk about those things, though. You can't deconstruct militarism without talking about masculinity. Because fundamentally, in modern day, our understanding of masculinity is rooted in the use of aggression and force. And those have been discussed and picked apart as intertwined concepts by women, particularly Black women feminists, who have shaped our modern understanding of the way that those concepts are interrelated. And so I think that you don't have a peace movement with any level of sophistication or understanding of intersectionality without women leaders and without understanding bell hooks and Audre Lorde and without having read all of these women who wrote beautiful and groundbreaking work about how the intersections of these different experiences and identities shape the social fabric that we're existing in, right?
You've been listening to interviews with Nina Nichols, Talanda Nichols, Brittany Vocal, and Michelle O'Leary, attendees and panelists at the conference, Women in Poverty, Women in Leadership, held in Troy at the First Presbyterian Church in Troy on March 15th. Those interviews were conducted by WOOC youth interns, Trayvon Voltron, a living legend, all right, and Lauren Wilson. The Poor People's Campaign will begin 40 days of direct nonviolent actions against classism, sexism, racism, militarism, and ecological destruction on Mother's Day, May 13th. For more information on how to participate, please go to poorpeoplescampaign.org.
Next, on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, we have labor correspondent Willie Terry.
If you see me stumble, don't stand back and look on. Be child now, brother. Give your hands to struggle. Give your hands to struggle. Give your hands to struggle.
Good evening. This is Labor Talk, and my name is Willie Terry, your host for Labor Talk. Give your hands to the struggle. That's a song in the civil rights movement that was done by Bernice Johnson Reagan of Sweet Honey on the Rock. And today we will be talking to my guest, Tanya Grant, who has given her hands to the struggle and who is a member of the 1199 Service Employee International Union, better known as SEIU, right? And she also is a representative and spokesperson for the Poor People Campaign, and that's the subject we'll be talking about tonight. And she is a labor activist. Hello, Tanya.
Hello, how are you?
And happy Women History Month. I know it's about to come to an end.
Thank you.
All right. And welcome to Labor Talk.
It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. Let me get started by asking you to tell us a little something about yourself.
Okay. I am a former, not former because I still carry my license, but I am an LPN by trade. I was a member of 1199 SEIU. I got involved because the facility in Troy, Diamond Hill Nursing and Rehabilitation, I was there when we received our first contract. I was on the negotiation committee for that. From there, I was recruited to come on staff for 1199 and work as an organizer there. So that is my job now. I am an administrative organizer for 1199.
Now, SEIU, who do they represent?
So 1199 SEIU, 1199 is the local, SEIU is our international. 1199 represents healthcare workers. So we have, we represent workers that work in hospitals. So we have everybody from doctors on down to housekeepers and dietary aides.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to get into our subject, which is the Poor People Campaign, because we want to get that information out.
Yes.
And I guess the first question would be, what is the Poor People Campaign?
So Dr. King actually started the Poor People's Campaign back in 1968. It was designed to bring clarity, to bring attention to the plight of poor people, not just people of color, but all poor people in America, okay, and give us a platform to have a voice to speak up about the things that impact the poor people in America. This is the richest country, and yet our poor people here are struggling. So that was the plight of it. And today we are revising it because the issues that were prevalent back in 1968, here we are in 2018, they are still prevalent. They have not gone away. They are not cleaned up, clarified, or anything. They are still very present, and we need to do something about it.
So what would you say the major difference between what King did in 1967 and what the Poor People Campaign Organizing Committee is trying to do today? What are some of the...
I think some of the differences now is that we actually have a climate in this country where we have a greater opportunity to make a bigger change. If you think about the means of communications that we have things like this radio show, we have internet, we have, whereas if you give a message out right now, 2 seconds from now, somebody hears that message. It's not a delay. So we have an opportunity now in this day and age with technology, with communication, with our young people. Our communities are becoming more active now because of the things that are going on. So we have the differences now, I believe, that we can make a bigger impact. And it doesn't have to be just nationally. It can be actually on a global level.
Well, as workers, you know, as a union, we're talking about labor. The question always arises, why should labor be involved in this process?
Labor should be involved because labor is made up of our working poor people. That is the movement. Labor movement is the movement. You know, we go to work. We have people. I represent individuals that go to work and barely can make ends meet from day to day. They are struggling. They are the working poor. They are the disenfranchised. They are the segment of that community that this campaign is absolutely addressing. So that is why labor should get involved. How can we not? Labor has a legacy of being the voice of the underprivileged in all our communities across all walks of life. And that is our obligation. It is our obligation. It is our obligation as the union, as labor, to be the change that we want to see.
Yeah. Well, we did a program here about labor and the civil rights movement.
Yes.
And one of the things, the historical thing, is that labor came kind of late, you know, in reference to getting involved in the civil rights movement. They were involved. The other question I want to ask, what are some of the goals and objectives of this campaign? You know, what
the goals and objective of this campaign is, this is an ongoing thing. So this is not just in this moment. Mm-hmm. This is an ongoing thing. We want to see sustainable changes. We want to see long-term and long-reaching changes, not just a today change, not just a this year change, but the changes that we want to see are going to ripple and impact not just me, but my children and my children's children. We want to see a complete change to the systems that are in existence today, not just a temporary fix.
And how could people get involved in this process?
So there are a number of ways you can get involved. We have the Capital Region has a Poor People's Campaign Committee that you can get involved in. We have a presence on Facebook. You can look up the Poor People's Campaign and get involved online that way. Hudson Valley has a Poor People's Campaign chapter. We are actually having a Poor People's Campaign activity April 10th up in Fort Hudson. And people can come out and participate that way. So we're on the internet. We're on the Facebook. We, you know, we do have a presence.
Okay. Now, I know Martin Luther King was in Washington. Is there anything major or national this plan?
I believe that we are starting, if I'm recalling correctly, Mother's Day starts the 40 days of action, civil disobedience. So there will be activities, there will be actions that are taking place across the country. Information about those upcoming events will be released, you know, as time draws closer.
Oh, okay. Is there anything else you would like to tell us about this process then?
The biggest thing that I would like to say is that this is not just a African-American problem, a minority problem. This is an everybody problem. This is an everybody movement. One person can't do it alone. But if we all band together, we can accomplish major changes and major things. So that's the biggest thing I would like to say.
All right. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you very much.
All right. That's all the time we have. But I hope you can come back to visit us.
Sure.
To, you know, update us or share more information about the Poor People Campaign.
Absolutely.
You do that. And this has been Labor Talk with your host, Willie Terry. Until next time, give your hands to the struggle and give your hands to the Poor People Campaign.
All right, Mr. Terry. Speak it like you mean it. All right. That was Willie Terry, labor correspondent, talking to Tanya Grant of Local 1199.
For our final segment, we're joined by Kevin Krolik, director of the Chapel and Cultural Center at RPI. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the RPI Chapel and Cultural Center? What do y'all do there?
Well, the Chapel and Cultural Center is a unique place. It's home to a Catholic parish, but so much more than just that. It's a multi-purpose performing arts center for the RPI community and the greater community of the Capital Region.
Awesome. So y'all just hosted the Peace Crane project there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was just yesterday, actually. And that was a project that we did in partnership with the Community Advocates of RPI, which is a club on the campus. And what we have is a crane that features 1,000 individually folded origami cranes. So it's this giant resemblance of a crane made up of individual origami cranes. And through the past years that's been hanging, it's collected dust and has weathered. And that project was finished yesterday, actually, but lasted throughout the past year, refolding 1,000 of those cranes and then restringing them to make this giant ornament that we use to decorate our main auditorium.
How long did that take?
It took the better part of the whole day. We started at 9 o'clock by lowering the existing crane down and figuring out a plan to attack the project because we had to get it done in the scope of a day. So with the support from RPI students and being that it was their GM week and they do voting for the Grand Marshal of the Union and the President of the Union, students had no class. So we had volunteers come to help and aid in that project. So it took the better part of the day. We disassembled each rope one by one and restrung new cranes. And at first, it didn't seem like the difference was going to be that drastic. But once we did half of it and you could see the difference from the original half to the new half, it was quite a remarkable difference.
Awesome. Tracking. Yeah. Can you talk a little about the significance of the peace crane?
Sure. So 1,000 origami cranes is a symbol that's common in various aspects. I apologize, I'm not the most familiar with the meaning of 1,000 cranes, but it's typically given as a wedding gift for as a 1,000 cranes being a symbol of peace and tranquility for a new life. Also, just the symbol of 1,000 cranes being peaceful.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. I hear that the Chapel and Cultural Center is about to celebrate its 50th anniversary.
That is true, yes.
What are you guys doing for that?
We have a full schedule of events lined up for this month. In the month of April, every single weekend, we have events with RPI, with the Sage Colleges downtown, Albany Pro Musica, and involving both RPI, which is home to us, and the Greater Capital Region. Will be really a great series of events.
Awesome. What kind of stuff is happening?
So this weekend, we have RPI Chamber Ensembles. On April 6th at 7 p.m., the students from the Chamber Music course present a concert of music for a variety of small ensembles by Borden, Mendelssohn, Mozart, and other artists. Following that concert, we have the Rensselaer Concert Choir the next day on April 7th at 2 p.m., which will be a concert of French and nearly French music. Nearly French. Mm. And that's conducted by Nick DeMason from the School of Humanities, Arts, and Social Sciences. The concert choir actually uses the Chapel and Cultural Center as its main rehearsal space. So one of the other purposes of the chapel is not only for the religious, but also as a rehearsal space. So many evenings, the concert choir, as well as our other groups, use the space for that purpose.
Beautiful. This is yes. A really exciting set of events. Can you talk a little about the history of the Cultural Center? It's been around for 50 years.
Yes. The history of the Chapel and Cultural Center is really unique. There's a history before the building actually started, which was the Catholic community of RPI, which translated into the Rensselaer Newman Foundation, which was the organization, the funding organization to build the Chapel and Cultural Center. The Chapel and Cultural Center was constructed in the late 1960s, 1968, before Rensselaer had a formal arts and music department. So it served as a meeting place for religion and the arts. And in its early days, we used to host a festival of religion and the arts, which brought together those two entities, which had a lot of similarities to them, actually. Hmm. So earlier this year, to rejuvenate that religion and the arts, we had a speaker series that brought together different speakers involving dance, music, and paintings, and arts in general, and how that fits into religion.
Mm. What kind of connections do you guys have with like the current arts programs at RPI, like MPAC and the arts department?
We support a lot of the programs that RPI has, and especially the clubs and organizations, the student clubs and organizations, in particular the RPI a cappella groups. The Rensselaerics have a concert coming up the following weekend now, April 13th. That's going to be at 8 p.m., and the title of that performance will be Rensselaerics Presents Go to Camp. So one thing that the a cappella groups do, which is different from traditional performance, is that they involve a little bit more production to that. So it's more of a show. You go to the show, but not only have the voices, but have a storyline to go along to it as well.
That sounds super fun. So I want to, there have been a lot of directors of the center over the years. Can you talk a little about what you've brought to the program as director? and what you're planning on doing with it?
Mm-hmm. So I came to RPI as a student in 2007. After graduating, I had a strong background with event services and music and lighting. And that background was a really good foundation for what the Chapel and Cultural Center needed. The Chapel and Cultural Center has a variety of events, and I had the background of music and working in catering right on RPI's campus formerly, and that paralleled right into being able to host student events for RPI.
Awesome. And are there directions you'd like to push the Cultural Center in the upcoming time?
I'd really like to push the Cultural Center to expand our horizons, open our doors to more people, more students, raise awareness of the facility and the various uses that it has in the area.
Well, thank you. I've learned a lot about it today already. Yeah. Are there any other events coming up this season that you haven't mentioned yet?
Yes. One of the featured events promoting the 50th anniversary is going to be Albany Pro Musica. celebrating the 50th anniversary of the C+CC, Albany Pro Musica will present Let's Talk About Love, Choral Music That Touches the Heart. That's once again April 21st at 8 p.m. Most events are free of charge. However, for this event, tickets will be sold for $10. Tickets are available at Brown Paper Tickets / Chapel Cultural Center.
Awesome. Thank you.
Some of the other events in the following weeks will also be an Italian cafe where the auditorium will be transformed with music, and our pastor, Father Ed, will present a menu of his finest Casergiano fixings, all Italian. So it'll definitely be a fun event. The Sage Singers will present a concert of the Requiem of John Rutter, 1945, directed by Michael Musial, and that'll be at 7 p.m. And next month in May, we have the Dean of Humanities, Arts, and Social Sciences, Mary Simone, presenting a spring concert with Kim Osborne, and that'll be on May 4th at 5 p.m.
Awesome. Thank you. Can you just let us know how folks can find out more about the Chaplin Cultural Center at RPI?
To find out more information, I invite everyone to please check out our Facebook page and our website, which is chapelandculturalcenter.org.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
That was Kevin Krolik, Director of Chapel and Cultural Center at RPI. That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Guy Schaefer. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org. Or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m., held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.